We've all heard it before. It's who you know. Now hear why it's so true. Welcome to Social Capital, the weekly podcast where we dive into social relationships and how the investment you put into them establishes trust, reciprocity, and value within your networking community. Your host, Lori Hybe, will connect with top professionals and dive into their best networking stories and techniques to share with you.
Hey, everybody, Lori Hybe here. Welcome to the Social Capital Podcast. Our show notes are found at socialcapitalpodcast.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at LJ Hybe and on Facebook. This week's guest is Jill Manti. Jill is co-owner of Manti Web, a 9-year-old web development company based in Houston, Texas, serving creative agencies throughout the U.S. She has a degree in theater, is married to her business partner, and is mom to 6 kids. She brings the diplomacy, calm, and solutions-oriented mindset she has learned in her varied life experiences to her work with clients. She is also a graduate of the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business Program. Jill, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Lori. How are you today?
I am great. Thanks for asking. So web, I mean, this is definitely something that you and I have in common besides the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business Program.
Yes.
So let's talk about that a little bit. Why are accessible websites important?
So accessible websites are one of those things right now. They're a little bit of a hot button item because there have been a lot of lawyers who are sending out demand letters. And that makes businesses very nervous because even if there's not an ultimate lawsuit involved, no business likes to get a letter from a lawyer saying you need to make changes or you need to pay me money or both. So there's a legal side of accessibility that is usually what gets people's attention. But in my opinion, more importantly than the legal side of things is that we want to be able to do business with everyone who wants to be able to do business with us. And if our website is making it hard for any reason, whether that's because it just has general usability issues or because someone who's blind actually cannot use your website or someone who has some other form of challenge cannot use your website. I talked to an accessibility expert one time and they said, you know, we all eventually will have a disability because age is the number one growing disability. Mm-hmm. And so we want to make sure that we are creating a web that is usable by everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that 100%. It's and the technology continues to evolve, but I think that accessibility is kind of always behind on with the evolution of technology.
Yes. Unfortunately, it's still one of those things that it still comes down to how the website is coded, and it's not really hard-coded in. So it's one of those things that you still have to be really mindful of. And most website companies don't necessarily ask about that upfront. So unless it's a request that's made, people come to me and say, well, don't you think that my website is accessible? And I usually say, did you pay extra for it? Because if not, probably not. Mm-hmm. It does take more time. There's all sorts of different levels of accessibility. There's all sorts of different levels of compliance. And you really have to know what your goal is. Sometimes you take the baby steps that you can take. You know, it's very different to make your website accessible if you're a small business than if you're Target. It's just the budget is different. The capabilities are different, but it's certainly something that should come up in a discussion about a website. And it's certainly something that needs to be addressed and it needs to be intentional and not just accidental.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really good information. So Jill, going back to the bio that we shared, you mentioned, or I mentioned on your behalf, actually, that you have a degree in theater. So how did you go from a degree in theater to owning a web development company?
Well, that's always comes up. And people, first of all, let me make it really clear that I do not personally code our websites. That is, I have people for that, as I like to say. So it's not that I switched from having a degree in theater to suddenly being a developer. That's not the case at all. But I got a degree in theater, got married, had some kids, spent some time at home. And then my husband had this brilliant idea that we should start a business. And he is a website developer, or he is a software developer. And so this is where we ended up. And but what I found to be really interesting is there's a lot of odd similarities between building a website and putting on a play.
Okay.
So
elaborate,
project
please.
Management. Yeah. So I spent a lot of time doing stage management work, which stage management work is all about taking, you know, actors who all have their diverse opinions and personalities, and a director who thinks that they know how everything should be done, and all sorts of creative people, some more left-brained, some more right-brained, and directing them all so that at the end of the day, when it's time for the curtain to go up, the curtain goes up. And one of the things that I bring to website project management is we have an extremely high on-time record, because it makes me twitchy to not go live on time. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's because when you're doing a show, I don't care if you're duct taping costumes together at 5 a.m., there's going to be an audience there at 7 p.m. that night, and there will be a show. And there is no option of, well, you know, things came up that we didn't anticipate, and so we're going to have to put off the opening night for a week. That just, unless you're on Broadway or someplace like that, that just doesn't happen.
Sure.
And I bring that same level of a little OCD around time to website development. And also the idea of, you know, you've got designers and you've got developers and you've got clients and you've got, we do a lot of work with creative agencies. So then I've got agency owners and all the people that work for the agency. You've got all these diverse personalities and diverse levels of, you know, what they think is important that you have to reconcile. So I spend a lot of time doing pretty much what I spent time doing as a stage manager. It's figuring out, yes, I understand. You think the most important thing on this website is the font. I understand that. However, we've got this concern over here that's a competing concern that we also have to take into consideration.
Sure.
And making sure that everyone at the end of the day feels heard and feels like they are happy with the end result, from the person doing the coding to the person doing the design to the person paying the bills to the person handling. Maybe the branding is a different person than the designer. So making sure that all those pieces fit together is very, very similar to when you're putting together a play.
I mean, really, I thought, goodness, this is, it's quite the creative analogy or correlation is probably the better word. The creative correlation between the web development world and the theater world. And it's, I mean, quite impressive. And I've never really looked at it that way, but it totally makes sense. And I mean, I totally understand the web dev side of things. But I like the analogy that, or correlation that you put together here. I thought that was quite riveting. And I can imagine the pressure that you put on your team as far as the show is going on. We are starting no matter what.
Well, my husband came from a corporate software programming background, and he would come home and I would say, hey, you know, I know you have that launch date next week. Like, are you guys on track? And he's like, oh, no, I mean, that's going to be 6 months from now. And I would say, well, I mean, what?
You know? Right.
But I mean, it was supposed to launch in October. And what do you mean it's not going to launch till March? He's like, oh, well, I mean, there was never an intention that was going to launch in October. okay. You know? So, you know, they're just out there sticking random stakes in the ground. Mm-hmm. And that was actually when we started the business, something we really had to work through, because that was kind of his mindset is, you know, development's a moving target.
Yep.
And my view was, nuh-uh. Mm-hmm. So we've worked through that over the years. And still, I mean, sometimes it depends on the project, obviously.
Sure.
You know, sometimes if we're doing something that there are pieces of functionality that it's binary, it works or it doesn't, and you can't fake that. And unless you're willing to go live without that piece, that has to be done.
Sure.
And if it takes another day, it takes another day.
Yep.
But we really try to account for that in scheduling.
Yeah, definitely makes sense. So when is it a good idea to hire a development company versus a freelancer versus keeping it in-house?
So I think that there's really one answer to that, which is, do you have someone who can manage the development? Because it's not so much a question of, can you get the work done? It's a question of, can you communicate what work you need done?
Mm-hmm.
So whether you're working with a freelancer or whether you're working with somebody in-house is a question of, do you properly know how to define the scope? Because the reason that people work with a company like mine and probably a company like yours as well, mm-hmm. is not just about getting the work done, because you can get the work done. I will just tell you flat out, you can get the work done cheaper going overseas.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, 100%. And when you ask for XYZ, you're going to get XYZ, even if you needed ABC.
Yep.
So if you're not in a position to define what XYZ is, and I don't just mean saying, I need a slider on my homepage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really getting into the details of exactly what you need, exactly how you need it to function, exactly why you need it to function that way, what you're really trying to accomplish. That's what I think a lot of times a web development company brings to the table is not just, it gets very commoditized sometimes. And people say, well, there are a million web developers, and that's true. And there is a commoditized version of web development.
Uh-huh.
But there's also a version of web development that's almost a little bit consulting at the same time.
Totally.
So if a client comes to me, and I'm sure if a client comes to you, and they say, hey, I need, you know, an e-commerce solution, and I need it to have 15 different products. And we look at it, and we're like, well, actually, what you need is one product with 15 different options.
Yep.
Then if you go to other to sometimes a freelancer, sometimes freelancers are good about this and sometimes they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the issue with going to a freelancer. Also the issue of is a freelancer going to be around 2 weeks from now, or are they actually looking for a job? And once they get it, they're not going to be around for you.
Sure.
So if you know what I really need is one product with 15 options, then you're probably in a pretty good place to take that wherever's cheapest, because you're in a good position to manage the process.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know kind of where you're trying to get to, you have the destination, but you don't have the map, then working with a web development company, you can actually get that map. And you have somebody who will work with you on not just like, okay, well, you're going to get on the freeway and you're going to go down there, but someone who can say, well, I actually really know the territory, and going on the freeway is not the best way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And is going to make sure a lot of times it's going to be faster. It's going to be more reliable. It's going to be less frustrating. And it's going to be, in some cases, not really that much more expensive by the time you do revisions and everything to get things just right, if you're working with a web development company. But there are definitely companies out there that they have somebody in-house. Like we work with a lot of agencies, like I said. Sometimes an agency has a principal who came from a web development background. It probably doesn't make sense for them to do business with my company because they can get the work done cheaper because they know exactly what they need.
Sure. Yep. Yeah, definitely. I really like all the analogies that you're using. I think this is a really good way to help illustrate especially like the map and the destination, if that's a really good way to illustrate that.
I'm an analogy queen. Everything's an analogy. I love to make analogies.
That's your theater part, right? Really showcasing.
It's actually my education part. I was a teacher for a couple of years. And so it's always about how can I connect what people understand to something that they don't understand. Yeah. And so I spend a lot of time trying to figure out. People are technology phobic a lot of the time.
Oh, totally.
And so I'm always trying to say, okay, I know you don't understand the web development piece, but I know you do understand this thing over here. It's kind of the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I always use the analogy of building a house when building a website, but I like your roadmap one. I think that's a good one too. All right, Jill. So here we're actually on this podcast to talk about networking.
Excellent.
So can you share with our listeners your most successful or favorite networking experience that you've had?
So I have kind of a funny networking story. And I don't mean funny, haha. I mean funny, like it's kind of odd and quirky and people never believe me when I say this. But when we started the business 9 years ago, about a year in, I was on Twitter and I came across this Twitter hashtag, Twitter group, and I became involved with that group. And that group, until the past year, and now I'd have to go back and re-look at the numbers, was in one way or another connected to 90% of the business that we had done.
Wow.
And either somebody had introduced me to somebody else who then introduced me to somebody else, or, you know, people talk about social networking and usually what they mean is, should I have a Facebook page? And to me, like, I've never really concentrated on having a Facebook page, but I'm extremely active online in Facebook groups. In this Twitter group, like we still keep in touch. Like one of my best friends is somebody that I met through that group. And I have traveled all over the United States meeting people from that group. It's really special. I mean, I'm working on a project right now for one of them. And so I've formed business partnerships. I've had business mentors through that group. So to me, I do a lot of in-person networking, but I do a lot of networking online, and I think that that's a missed opportunity for a lot of people, because I think that they get tied into this notion of, you know, like I said, that social networking is having your Facebook page and pumping out content, versus for me, it's about getting involved with a community, whether that community is in person, whether that community is online. It doesn't really matter. To me, in my opinion, but getting involved in a community. And so, you know, we're both in the 10KSB group, mm-hmm. and there are opportunities there for networking in person, like with your local cohorts and things like that.
Yep.
But I've gotten more out of networking with the people that I've met online, mm-hmm. through the alumni program than I have necessarily with the in-person, because it's more day-to-day. Like I will have the events here like quarterly. And then if there's no follow-up in between, well, who cares? You know, and that's the big thing about networking is it's one thing to go to an event and meet a bunch of people. It's another to actually turn that around and form a relationship. And I find that sometimes that's easier to do online than it is in person.
So let's talk about that a little bit. What do you do to best nurture these relationships that you're building?
So whether it's online or in person, the first thing that I always am trying to do is to find out who the other person is, what they need. You know, how can I help you? I would say that the vast majority of our business has come about when, and this is not my strategy, it's just so happened to be, I actually was trying to help the other person.
Mm-hmm.
I actually was trying to make a connection for them, or I was trying to help them get some information, or, you know, whatever. And so I find that helping is the best way to start nurturing that process.
Yeah.
So if you're in person and you're having a conversation and somebody says, I really need a new CPA. Okay, great. Fantastic. A lot of people will say, well, here's the name of my CPA person, and walk away and call it a day. I would rather say, you know, I really like my CPA. I'm not sure if he's the best fit for you. can I get your information? Let me email you when I get back to the office. Let me find out a little bit more about exactly what your needs are. And then I'll either make an introduction to him or I'll make an introduction to somebody who's better suited. Mm-hmm. And so now you've created an environment where you've made that first step of making a connection. We all know how to do this. Like, we've been doing this for all of our lives, right? Yep. Like, we were in school and we would meet somebody. And how did we form a relationship with the person sitting next to us? Well, we loaned them a pencil. We borrowed a pencil. We said, yes, you can look at my notes. You know, whatever it is, it's the same thing in business. I mean, we're really all just 8-year-olds.
Yeah.
At our hearts, you know, we want people to like us. We want to be accepted. And the more that you can make yourself available to other people, the better I find it. And to not get discouraged, because sometimes you reach out to someone that you really had a good connection with and you don't hear back from them.
What advice would you offer the business professional who's looking to grow their network?
Where are they? And go find them and start meeting with them. Or look on LinkedIn or find a Facebook group or whatever. But first figure out who it is that you're looking for. I think one of the mistakes we make when we're trying to quote unquote grow our network is we just randomly start going to networking events. And while I'm always up for meeting new people, no matter what, like I always find good information from people of all walks of life. If the purpose of growing your network is professional, then the first thing you need to do is figure out which pieces of your professional network you're hoping to grow.
Yeah, that's really important. I think I love Simon Sinek's Start With Why, and I'm actually somewhat flabbergasted that some people still aren't familiar with him. 'Cause I feel like he's reached as far as he can, but whenever I bring it up, there's always at least one person that's like, huh, that's interesting. Never heard of that before. But it totally makes sense, right? You need to know what your goal is in order to kind of build a plan to achieve that goal and be more strategic about where your time's being invested. All right, Jill. So if you could go back to your 20-year-old self, what would you tell yourself to do more of, less of, or differently with regards to your professional career?
That's an excellent question. I would say that I would want to spend more time taking risks. And by that, I mean that I spent the first 6 years that we were in business really terribly, terribly concerned with whether other people were happy with what I was doing. And, you know, I have clients and people that I need to report to, and it's important that they're happy. But that cannot be the only thing. Being a people pleaser is really problematic in a lot of areas, but I think especially when you're a business owner, it's really stressful to be a people pleaser, and it's really not productive and helpful. And at the end of the day, like, you fail because people are still not always going to be happy. And so I would tell myself to spend less time worrying about that and just spend less time worrying about whether other people are going to judge whatever professionally. No, spend more time understanding what's important to me and just walking that out.
Yeah, that's very sound advice. And I think it's extremely challenging, as you said, because as you alluded to earlier on, I mean, human nature is to be helpful, right? And so we're trying to just to be that people pleaser and be a resource to everyone. But at the same time, there needs to be alignment with what you just said, which was, you know, what's important to you.
Well, I'm going to name drop two more names real quickly.
Okay.
Of books. So Brené Brown talks about how one of the most compassionate things we can do is to establish boundaries. And that sometimes the most helpful thing we can do to people is to say, I'm not the person to help you. And one of my favorite books is Book Yourself Solid. The author's name escapes me at the moment, but he's well known. And he talks about we're all designed to serve a particular group. You know, we're pre-built with personality, strengths, et cetera, to serve in a specific space. And that when we try to serve outside of that space, because we want to help, we're not doing right by ourselves. We're not doing right by our customer or the person that we're trying to help. And we're not doing right by the person who is put on this earth to serve that person. And so that's a philosophy that has really helped me in that regard, because sometimes the most helpful thing that I can do to someone is to say, let me introduce you to someone who's better suited for this.
Yep. You're still being helpful then.
Yeah. You can still be helpful without having to be a people pleaser.
Yep.
So sometimes it's just not a good match. You know, sometimes you meet somebody and you're trying to do work with them and you're both miserable, but you might know somebody who's like really a good fit for that personality. Sometimes it's not about, I like to try to believe, you know, as much as humanly possible, that there are no bad clients. There are just bad fits. I don't know if that's true. But I like to believe it.
Did you see the gears spinning in my head when you said that? I was like, oh, let me think about that for a second. I mean, I guess that could be true to some degree.
I mean, there are unhappy people. But well, sometimes there's a person out there who can better deal with that unhappiness. Like, that fits better with how they do business or how, like, just their personalities than me. You know, there are, even between myself and my husband, you know, there are clients that he's better at dealing with and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure. So, no, that's interesting. So, and the name of that book was Book Yourself Solid.
Yes.
Yeah. I've not heard of that one. I'm really interested in taking a look at it. That's one of the things that one of my takeaways every time I interview someone is I add more books to my reading list.
Yeah. Well, and it's got a really great, workbook kind of a model associated with it. Or if it doesn't have it in the book, there's a workbook separately, or that you can download the PDFs, and that will really walk you through. It's like unique selling proposition on steroids. It's cool. Really about who are you meant to serve.
I love it. I'm definitely going to go add that to my Amazon cart after this.
I will send him a bill for my royalties.
Okay. Oh, Jill. Okay. So any final word or advice to offer our listeners with regards to growing and supporting your network?
I think the best thing that we can all do is just to remember each other's humanity. You know, we're in a kind of a difficult time as a society, and it's very easy to get online and see people and just not want to have anything to do with them, or in person, not have anything to do with them. And I think just not just from a networking perspective, but I think anything that makes you a better human makes you a better networker. And I think compassion, understanding that we all kind of want the same things in life, and helping to create an environment where that can thrive and flourish. You don't have to like everybody, but it doesn't cost anything to be nice. And it doesn't cost anything to just try to look at things through that person's eyes and at least be respectful.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think I'm seeing, even in networking sometimes, there's starting to be some scratchiness, you know?
Sure.
And I think the more that we can just remember each other's humanities and remember the other person has a family and the other person has things that are important to them and the things that they care about and things that, you know, they want and hopes and dreams, and we can connect on that level instead of all the other stuff, the better off we're going to be from a business perspective, a personal perspective, and just from a societal perspective.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. Great advice. And I loved what you said about just whatever makes you a better human being. I mean, it is going to make you a better networker, but you're going to be a better human being.
I mean, exactly.
At the end of the day, you're going to be better at everything you do, not just a better networker.
If you have to choose between being a good networker and a good human being, choose to be a good human being.
So. Yes, absolutely. Okay, Jill, if anyone was interested in getting in contact with you, what's the best way they can reach you?
I'm always available by email, and I'm always available by phone. And so either one of those is a great way to reach out. I'm also available on LinkedIn, but you're going to get in touch with me a lot faster through email or phone.
Cool. All right. And we will include all of that information in the show notes. Thank you for being on the show today, Jill.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of fun to chat with you on this topic. It's a topic that means a lot to me.
No, it's a great conversation. I'm sure our listeners appreciate it as well. This wraps up our episode of Social Capital. A huge thank you to Jill Manti for taking the time to connect with us. Join us next week for another great guest as we continue the conversation on networking and building your community. If you need me, send an email to Lori@socialcapitalpodcast.com. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
That's all for this episode of the Social Capital Podcast. Be sure to visit socialcapitalpodcast.com for show notes, more episodes, and to check out our free ebooks on business and networking.